to an hour-long election special of Homespun C-SPAN. Today, thanks to taping by Dustin Richardson of WRIR, we are bringing you a full hour-long debate between the candidates for sheriff's office in Richmond, Virginia. This was taped October 11th at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center. The current city sheriff, Michelle Mitchell, former Richmond Police Homicide Detective C.T. Woody, and Emmett J. Jafari, and longtime veteran of the City Department of Corrections, are featured as the candidates. These candidates are introduced and moderated by Donna Dora, the Vice President of the Greater Fulton Hill Civic Association.
I can go through an introduction of all three candidates and call each one up individually. C.T. Woody is a former homicide detective of the Richmond Police Department, retiring in 2002 after almost 35 years on the force. He has since that time been leading investigations in the Richmond City Common Law's Attorney's Office, where he is an expert consultant for trial preparation and presents cases to the grand jury. Mr. Woody has completed criminal justice coursework at BU and VCU and is a graduate of Leadership Metro Richmond. Mr. Woody served as a sergeant in the United States Army before joining the Richmond PD. Mr. Woody has instructed at the College of William and Mary Law School for the Department of Criminal Justice and the Commonwealth's Attorneys Conference, and is a certified instructor for the Richmond Police Department Training Academy. Mr. Woody, would you come up and take your seat, please?
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to introduce Michelle B. Mitchell. Michelle B. Mitchell is the incumbent candidate. She was elected sheriff of the city of Richmond in 1994, and so has won three elections since then. Ms. Mitchell reports she is the first female sheriff in the Commonwealth of Virginia and that she manages the largest jail in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Ms. Mitchell is an honors graduate of Virginia Commonwealth University with a BS degree in psychology. She began her law enforcement career in 1983 in the Virginia Department of Corrections. Before her election as sheriff, Ms. Mitchell was already an employee of the Richmond Sheriff's Department and had been since 1986. Ms. Mitchell is a lifelong resident of the city of Richmond and attended Richmond's public schools. She is also a graduate of Leadership Metro Richmond. Ms. Mitchell, will you come up and take your seat, please?
Thank you.
E.J. Emma J. Jafari is a lifelong resident of the city of Richmond, attended its public schools, and has also attended BUU. He has a background in law enforcement and corrections, having been a correctional officer of the Commonwealth of Virginia from 1975 to 1991. Mr. Jafari has also been a school resource officer, our special police officers in the Richmond Public Schools. Mr. Jafari was manager of public facilities and park security for the city of Richmond from 1995 to 1997. He was assistant director of the Goochland County Office on Youth Programs of the Goochland Community Corrections Department. And since leaving that position in 2002, he now owns and operates three businesses: document drafting and investigations, running cultural and educational tours, and handcrafting steel and bronze items. Mr. Jafari, will you come up and take your seat, please? Mr. Woody, after the drawing of lots, you have been chosen as the first candidate to speak tonight. Will you please make your opening statement? You have 3 minutes to do so.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for having me here tonight. I am C.T. Woody, and I want to be your next sheriff here in the city of Richmond. Let me tell you why, and it's really pretty simple. More importantly, I know that it's going to take someone like myself with more than 38 years of law enforcement and public safety experience, my ability to solve problems and work with the city leadership and our community to move the office forward and improve conditions at the jail. In 12 years, there has been no progress in decreasing overcrowding, reducing recidivism, facilitating repairs at the facility until this year. In 12 years, there has been a lot of threats and lawsuits, questionable spending practices, unethical decision making. With your help, we can remove the blemish from the sheriff's office. Good leadership can occur regardless of the state of the facility that you work in. I have led small and large groups and workforces It requires more than just talk. It requires commitment from the leader to do whatever needs to be done within the law to get results. I have the experience and the knowledge to bring people together and solve problems. So I will gladly sit in the table, at the table, with anyone willing to help me to carry out the duties of this office. My primary function and my primary focus of Richmond City Jail is number one, the jail must be safe and secure at all times. Safe for employees to work there, safe for the inmates that are housed there, and safe for the community and other people that have to come there. And we all know that's not true. I believe very firmly in enhanced training for the deputies. Richmond City Jail is one of the largest city jails in the state of Virginia. And if you think training is not a serious issue, how in the world can an inmate get killed, the cells get cleaned up, he lays there for 3 and 4 hours, and nobody knows what's happened? What's with that? Training is very important.
Will you wrap up, Mr. Wood?
Yes. Maximize your resources, partnering with faith-based organizations. Reduce overcrowding and recidivism rate. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Ms. Mitchell, you have 3 minutes to make your opening statement.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Michelle B. Mitchell, and for the last 12 years, I've spent my career keeping you, the public, safe and caring for the men and women behind bars. The duties of the sheriff are as follows. One, to serve civil process in the city of Richmond to maintain our court houses by providing security and the operation of the local jail. During my tenure as sheriff, I have spent the majority of my time maintaining and repairing an outdated, overcrowded facility. To hold the city of Richmond accountable for the conditions at the Richmond City Jail, I filed a lawsuit compelling them to improve the living conditions for my staff and for the inmates that are under my custody and care. I'm sorry to say that the lawsuit has never been heard, but I am happy to report that we do have a new roof and that the mayor and his new administration has agreed to take on the daily task of repairing and maintaining our faulty locking devices until they're ultimately replaced. In addition to that, this mayor has been understanding of our problems. He has agreed to form a jail commission that is now looking to see and seek new fundings to build a new Richmond City Jail. In addition to that, we have to realize that the Richmond City Jail is terribly overcrowded. Last year, we had over 28,000 admissions to the Richmond City Jail. Those men and women who come there often face illiteracy. They have drug addiction problems. They have mental and physical problems also. But in addition to dealing with the overcrowding at the jail, I can honestly tell you that that doesn't consume all of my time. And I am terribly nervous, so you have to excuse me. But again, to deal with the inmates' issues, we started a new drug treatment program called Belief. Belief is a program modeled after a program in Henrico that deals with a person's addiction not only while they're in custody, but we follow them into the community where we lend support and services to help them not to return. In addition to that, to deal with the severe health problems that we have at the jail, I implemented a new program with Westbury Pharmacy that provides free medication to inmates suffering from HIV, diabetes, and hypertension, because a healthy community is a safe community. In addition to that, we are involved in your community. We have over 200 inmates every weekend working, picking up trash, maintaining your parks, and filling potholes. In addition to that, we have a triad program that focuses on our senior citizens, making sure that they are safe and happy and whole. I've spent my career, like I said, dedicated to the men and women behind bars. Unlike anybody else sitting at this table, my experience has the breadth of knowledge to deal with the very complex problems of running an urban jail. We have more inmates working on the weekends picking up trash than Chesterfield has in their entire jail. You need a sheriff who has the breadth of experience, the knowledge, and the willingness to stand up against any obstacle or any odds to get the job done. And that candidate is me. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Mr. Jafari, 3 minutes for your opening statement.
Thank you. And good evening. I want to first of all thank the Fulton Civic Association for inviting me out. Some of you may have read the paper and saw that there was a debate over the weekend, Saturday. Didn't know about the debate, but I want to thank the Civic Association for extending that invitation, allowing us all to come here so that the public can really see and compare for themselves exactly who brings what to the table. I'm not going to reiterate things that have just been said. I think that by the numbers, for the record, this is my third time running for sheriff. I have committed a lifelong effort to working with humans, to working with inmates, both adult and juvenile. It gives me a confidence. I, like the sheriff, nervous. When you come in front of the public, you should be nervous because we owe you a debt of gratitude. And we're going to owe you, whichever one you select is going to owe you. I personally feel that the public trust has been violated by what is going on at the jail. If you look at the chronology of things that have occurred, so many things have occurred until it's just mind-boggling how these kinds of things occur. But that's if you have never worked in corrections. I started out working in corrections back in 1975. Little did I know that today I would have amassed the knowledge about corrections from all directions. Contrary to what Mr. Woody's campaign is saying, and I really admire him for his 38 years of dedication, corrections is a whole different ball of wax. All right, okay, let me explain to you why. When Mr. Woody did his best work, and he did his best work on the street, I take nothing from him. Mr. Woody had a badge, he had a gun. Let me explain to you about a corrections officer. A correction officer's best weapon is his mind and his foresight. Because when he goes toe-to-toe, day-to-day, 16 hours sometimes a day, because you got to let him go after 16 hours. When he does that, he has to have the ability, he has to have the training, he has to have the foresight and the vision to know what to look for. You must understand, in an overcrowded circumstance, you're always outnumbered. You don't have any weapons. So the inmate knows you don't have any weapon. So you can't say freeze, you can't say anything. You have to stay on your P's and Q's. And that comes from the top down. When the top is tight, everybody between the lowest rung on the ladder and the top rung on the ladder is going to be tight. That's corrections. So I know you called all of us here tonight for a debate, and I know that there are some questions for us. But you know something? The real question is going to be for the voters this year. We're still having in operation at the city jail a system of warehousing people that's been handed down from the 60s. You know, let's look at the progression. Look at the passing of the baton. It has never changed.
Will you wrap up, Mr. Jafari?
Certainly. The sheriff has done as best she could based on what she knew coming into that job. What I'm asking you to do this fall is make the choice between continued warehousing or corrections. Because corrections involves making corrections in folks' lives while you got the cap margins.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari.
Thank you.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
Well, I'd like to open the floor up for questions. Please don't be shy. These candidates want to answer your question. Yes, sir, in the back.
Mr. Woody is running his campaign on his background. How come he never applied for chief?
I'm going to exercise the committee's prerogative to ask the candidates about their backgrounds and why they've chosen the career paths that they have. Mr. Woody?
Mr. Jones, that's a very good question. But my experience and my background, including to yours, is second to none. That's my question to you, and that's my answer to you.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell, will you tell us about your choice and your career?
Well, I can honestly tell you that my career kind of chose me. I went to school to be a marriage counselor, and I ended up finding employment at the Richmond City Jail. But I can honestly tell you that since I've been there, it was just shocking to me on my first day to get my pack of keys and go to the back of the jail and see just hundreds and hundreds of men and women literally living in little boxes. And that's always left an impression with me because most of these people were my age at that time when I first started. And I spent my whole life trying to improve their living condition, whether it be in the jail or out of the jail. It makes no sense that in this community that we could have 28,000 people to come in and out of our doors. They come to us not knowing how to read, having serious health problems, never having had a job, having deplorable family conditions. And even though it seems like the task is insurmountable, if you can change one life, one time, you've affected a whole entire family and a whole entire community. And no matter what goes on in my life, I will always be committed to the men and women behind bars.
Thank you. Mr. Jafari, your career choices.
Okay, is this in response to the question that he asked?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. I've been brought here as a matriculation. As I indicated to you, in 75, I started out as a basic corrections officer. In need of a job, not really knowing that it would bring me here to this point. Since that point, I have been able to work as a mess steward, knowing what it takes to operate the kitchen, knowing how security operates in the kitchen, knowing about portion control and controlling the dollar bills. From that point, I've gone on to be a manager at a state facility and manager of the entire campus as an administrator on duty. I've also been an administrator out at Crater Youth Care Commission. And from that point, I've been able to go on to manage the public facilities for the city of Richmond, which required me to post and compensate unarmed and armed personnel. So for me, it's been a rise through the ranks, and it's been a toe-to-toe, if you will, mano-a-mano from corrections head up, working with the inmates one-on-one. And that's given me the kind of insight that it takes to not only train officers, but to also know how to have an effect on people's lives.
Thank you. If you pass that down this way again, and can we have another question, Mr. DePasquale?
Yes, I'd like to direct this initially, and perhaps all the candidates, to Sheriff Mitchell.
Yes.
If you could put all the kind of minor day-to-day things behind you in your job, and have the big picture of what you would like to do with urban city incarceration. In other words, if you had a wish that could be granted, aside from more money or better locks, is there something that comes to mind, or a pet, a desire that you'd like to see implemented?
Thank you. In the interest of the even playing field and the drawing by lots, Mr. Woody will address his answer to that question first.
My answer to that question simply would be to surround myself with good, competent leaders that are qualified to do the jobs assigned to them. Thank you.
In answer to your question, I think all the problems were taken care of at the Richmond City Jail, my passion really is working with the offenders to change their lives. That's basically how I started off at the Richmond Sheriff's Office. Again, you have to look at what you're dealing with. The problems that they face don't end with their incarceration. They take them back into our community. So if I had my wish list and all the things I would want to do, I would really like to start to have a real comprehensive recovery plan, not just let somebody out of jail and expect for them to be productive citizens, because they haven't learned how to be productive citizens. So I'd like to see real housing opportunities for offenders. I'd like to see them to be able to start the task of learning a trade so that they can have meaningful employment, and that's employment that can support a family, because the average inmate has at least 3 to 4 children who come into my custody and care. The other component to that is, again, reintegrating them back into society. It is very hard to spend 6 or 7 months locked up and then come back and deal with your family and deal with some of the same forces and tensions that led you to come to my doorstep in the first place. So I would like to work really 90% of my time doing recovery, because I think everybody benefits from that.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Mr. Jafari, will you answer that question?
Certainly. My wish list starts, plain and simple, with selection of good people and training. You have to train them for what to look for so as to avert the kinds of calamities that have been occurring at the jail. That's the short and simple of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN, consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
You, sir, in the front, please, your question.
Phil Leo, Richmond Defender newspaper. The mayor has set up an advisory committee to look at problems in the jail and possible solutions. And according to the Daily newspaper, before the committee ever met, his chief aide, Paul Goodman, was in discussions with corporations that build private jails. And so that already is on the table. Could you comment on the possibility of the city going in the direction of a private jail as opposed to a city-run jail?
Good question. Mr. Woody?
Thank you. My comment to that would be, whatever the administration decides, they will still need a sheriff. I believe very firmly in good leadership, accountability, and I feel that some of the cities that I know of that have privatization, they either have gone back to the sheriff's department because of a lot of civil suits and things in that nature. However, I'm willing to serve as sheriff, whether it's privatized or whether it remains the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mitchell, your answer?
Again, one thing that you have to realize is that no matter what direction the city administration goes into, the sheriff does not get to pick and choose what type of jail he or she may have. But I can tell you that my stand on privatization is I am not in favor of it. I realize that Richmond has some economic needs that really preclude us from paying for a jail out of the city coffers. But on the same hand, for me personally, I do not believe in corrections for profit. I think that this is a conversation that must be had in this community, because you have to realize you can pick and choose your sheriff. You can't pick and choose what corporation is going to build your jail. And even though you may feel that that's not important, how men and women are treated behind bars ultimately affects our community. And again, when you have a private jail for profit, inmates don't work and inmates don't pay the bills. It's you. It's you that pay for the telephone calls. It's you that will have to pay for the mattresses. It's you that will have to pay for the health care. So when we begin this serious conversation about private corrections, this is something that you all really need to take seriously, because this will affect you and our community.
Thank you. Mr.
Chafari,
your answer.
I'm opposed, without knowing exactly what all is going into the details, I'm opposed to privatization. As I said earlier, I don't think that the problem, apart from the antiquity of the jail, is the jail itself. I think that it's the way the jail's being run. And I think that when you change from the top and the way the job is done, you'll also change the way the people do the job. Thank you,
Mr. Chafari.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN, consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
Question. Ma'am, you in the white shirt, please. Is it Ms. Bottom?
Yes. This is a question to all of the candidates. Please tell us, what about your background and experience qualifies you to run an organization with hundreds of employees?
Mr. Woody, will you answer that, please?
Very good question, Diane. I have been in charge of small groups, medium groups, and multi-jurisdictional groups. That means involved with state, federal, and local investigations from the highest. I directed the FBI in finding Christopher Goins when everybody here in Richmond was still saying that he was still here in Richmond. C.T. Woody was in charge of that multi-jurisdictional investigation. Not only told him where he was, but went up there and got him, brought him back, followed it all the way through court and all the way through the correction system. So being in charge of 100 people or 1,500 people, it makes no difference to C.T. because I am a leader that believe in surrounding myself with people that know what they are doing.
In addition to the people knowing what they have to do, you have to know what you have to do. Supervision is just that. It's supervising people's lives. And you have to understand, again, when you're the sheriff, people work at your pleasure. And what that really means is that there is no grievance procedure. So if you fire someone, that termination is final. It's very important to have somebody in this position that really understands how to write policies and procedure, who understands employment, who understands what it is to have to be responsible for people's lives. Because you're not just dealing with the inmates, you are dealing with staff. And when you're sitting in a hearing for somebody who is facing corrective action, you have to understand the breadth of the law so that you don't violate their rights. It's very important, once again, that we take a look at what it is that we're electing our sheriff to do. Organizing a group is not supervising and managing employees. It's not being responsible for the life and death of an inmate. Inmates have rights too, regardless of what you may believe, and you have to understand their grievance procedure and all of the steps that you need to safeguard to make sure that their rights are not violated. So it's very important that you have a sheriff who has that experience, and I've been supervising people all of my life. That's how I've spent my life's work.
I've been fortunate to have interviewed, hired, trained, and evaluated staff. From hundreds, from 200 right up to something like 450. When I worked for the city of Richmond, I was responsible for coordinating the EMS, the fire marshals, the police, who were the armed security, as well as the unarmed security, which could number in the hundreds. And I totally agree with the sheriff on this one. It's a total difference between just coordinating a group, the actions of a group, and actually knowing how to write policy and procedure, knowing what the parameters are to guide what you're doing and about to enter into with the staff. So it's very important, and at every level, from supervisor right on up to director level, I've been able to enjoy that practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shikari. Yes, sir, Blue Jacket.
Each of the candidates, there seems to be a supply-demand imbalance in equation. When you look at the housing of the inmates, versus that which is the supply versus the demand for law enforcement. And law enforcement's demand seems to exceed the supply or the availability of spaces, thereby creating overcrowding. So my question is simply this one, piggybacking off of privatization. In privatization, since profit motive would be the incentive, what incentive would be built in to reduce overcrowding as opposed to maintaining a low level of profitability, for all things that are involved in profits can either make a profit or a loss?
Thank you. Mr. Woody, can you answer that question?
Very good question. My answer to that would be, and it is the main problem that we are having right here today, you pay now or you pay later. As sheriff, my main concern would be about those juveniles between 5 and 11 years old, and to make sure that they do not go to juvenile court. That's how you keep them from going there. You work with them there. You won't have to worry about it being overcrowded. That's what you call being reactive to situation. I'm a proactive type of guy. You got to have a plan, and you got to have a mode that you're going to set your plan in action. You can't just react after they have been locked up and think you're going to save the world. The jail, the iron bars do not change minds. So you work with those that you can work with. My thing is concentrating on those hardcore criminals that kill people. They are the ones that you need. They are the ones that are running Richmond City Jail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell?
I think your question had to do with how do you prevent having more people locked up to make a profit for a private run facility. And that's very tricky, and that's why I say the conversation that the community has to have has to center around that. Most privately run jails, if they do offer programming, and let's face it, programming is how you really break the cycle of recidivism, they make the inmates pay for that. So if you want to have, to be involved in a drug treatment program, you have to pay for that. If you want to get your GED, you have to pay for that. So most inmates can't afford that, so they're precluded from ever having any type of real interdiction or intervention in their lives, so they just keep repeating the cycle of crime. But I want to correct something, because my opponent has continually talked about juveniles. And one of the things, as sheriff, the only juveniles that you come in contact with are the ones who've been adjudicated as an adult, which means that they have had a crime that the state has determined that they're going to be tried as adults. Juvenile detention is run by juvenile justice, not the sheriff of the city of Richmond.
Thank you. Mr. Jafari, your answer, please.
With regards to the question about overcrowding, I've never worked at a facility that wasn't overcrowded one way or another, which is an indication of how many offenders are actually coming into the system. But there are some factors that you need inside information on before you really reach a rational decision about this. We have in the correctional business what's known as a per diem. Others have it as well. Often you are paid per day to house inmates from other jurisdictions. So before you can really make a logical decision about exactly how overcrowded a facility is, you really have to have insight into what inmates need to be there, who should be there, who should be shipped out. From time to time, you see that they do ship inmates out back to their jurisdictions. That would help lower the overcrowded nature. But there's really no response that I can just give you to that, because we really don't know who's paying per diems. Is there a system in place where we're making money off this, which is a repetitive, this is a revolving door. If we're getting paid for this, then it's easy to get trapped in getting paid for it, and then you're overcrowded on the one hand, but you're not really overcrowded because it's of your own making. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN, consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
I'm going to take this opportunity to ask a question that the citizens belonging to the Civic Association have formed and asked me to ask. And that is, in your opinion, does the city jail lack sufficient funds to make physical improvements, or are available funds being misused? If you say more funds are needed, from what specific sources should they come? Mr. Wade.
Very good question. My answer to that would be, of course, the jail is underfunded. You always need more funds. But it's no excuse for misusing the funds that you have. It's no excuse for not prioritizing. To me, as sheriff, it's more important to fix the locks and have the inmates on the most dangerous tier to be not only just locked up, but they have to be locked in. That's more important than fixing the roof. Let some of them get wet, but they would be locked in. And that's my answer to that.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. Ms. Mitchell.
Well, I'm glad that you all find that funny, because I can honestly tell you that when we had a leaking roof, one of the things that we've talked about throughout this campaign and other campaigns is the fact that we are overcrowded. And we're overcrowded because we have the inmates that have been committed to our custody and care that actually belong there. We lost a whole entire cell block because of a leaking roof, which meant that inmates that should have been locked down couldn't be locked down, and they had to be returned to our dormitory-style pods where they had to live amongst others. So instead of having one person in a cell, that dangerous criminal had to go and live with 130 people on an open dormitory. I can honestly ask you this question. If you're sitting in your house and your back door may lock sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't, but you're sitting in your living room and the rain is pouring on your head, what are you going to fix first? Most of you all would say, I want the rain to stop pouring down on my head. We've had $15 million over the past 19 years to address the serious problems at the Richmond City Jail. Again, there isn't enough money. And if I had to make the prioritization once again, it would still be the roof, because I have to deal with the men and women who have to sleep on the floor. And to me, even though they're paying their debt to society, they have a right to have a bed and a cell that is safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Your answer, please.
Well, you got to have the locks. There's just no getting around it. You have to have the locks. But let me explain something to you. You have to understand how much time it takes. If we talk about the inmate that had to suffer through the last situation there, which is really a bad situation, and I don't want to misuse that, but I've worked in that kind of setting, and I want you to know, a man who was beaten to death hollers for a long time. He hollers for a long time. So that means somebody was either away from that post for a long period of time, or somebody ignored him for a long period of time. In any event, it's not acceptable. That's not acceptable. With regards to the roof, we have to fix the roof, because if you let the roof leak in on them, they're going to sue the sheriff. So, you know, you have to have your priorities in place. So you have to look at keeping them in jail, because if somebody's in jail for 3 days, it's not a death sentence. You should be able to go back to court. So the person who lost his life is unfortunate, but again, it reflects on how the individuals are trained who should have been monitoring that.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN, consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
We have another question from the floor. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Wick.
Yes.
I've had two people this week to tell me that going to the jail, quite frequently, that work with the prisoners for a house in the medical room to tell me that that area was the problem. And they said that people did not get the medication properly. The place is dirty. The inmates are not fed properly. They're not being treated with the dignity that it sounds like maybe they have been treated, should have been treated with. I would like to ask each of you, what would you do with that medical unit in the month of July when it's hot and no AC and the people are not getting what they need?
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Woody, you have 1 minute.
Well, I find all that you said is very, very true. They have some real serious issues in the medical department with cleanliness. The nurses down there complaining they have no protection, particularly on the weekends. They certain places to serve and wait on the inmates. They cannot get to them because they do not have anyone there to go with them. We have had constant people complaining. For instance, the most recent death. You go to the medical department, they tell you, they treat you. They send you back to the same location. You go back again, come complain about it. It's so bad, you go to the hospital, they operate on you right away, and you die. And then all you say is that, well, he's been to jail 4 or 5 times before for drugs and for this and for that. The important thing is this, why didn't he go to the hospital after he complained about the medical thing? So that's one of another major issues. You are correct. The place is filthy. It is deplorable down there. And I've had people to tell me that who actually work there.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell, will you address that issue?
Yes, I will. The Richmond City Jail has been inspected to death by the Department of Corrections, and one of the things that they have always commented on, and those records are open for public discretion and for public review, is the cleanliness of our facility. Our medical department is teeny tiny. It is very small. But again, I don't care whether I'm sitting here, whether he's sitting here, or whether he's sitting here. They will inherit the same jail. I have been telling you all for years and years and years about the deplorable conditions that exist at the Richmond City Jail. But it's not the lack of management, it's the lack of space and resources, and that will not change by changing the sheriff. We spent last year, we went over budget, $7 million, not in operational costs, not in gasoline, not in people's salaries, just providing inmate medical care. $7 million of your money, because we do want them to be healthy and whole. So again, yes, we are short-staffed, be the first one to admit it. Do we have a small medical department? Yes, we do. The space that they have to work in is very tenuous and it's very trying. But that's the reality of the Richmond City Jail, and until we get a new one, that will continue to be the reality. And what you have, to understand is, once again, we do all that we can with the resources that we have.
Thank you. Mr. Jafari.
If it's okay with you, I'll just talk. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the mic things. The first thing, I think the sheriff said something when she said something about the public records. Well, I tried a couple of years ago to get some public records through Freedom of Information. I'm still waiting for the records. So hopefully you'll have better luck than I have. The second part is about the deplorable situation down there. I'm quite sure it's an antiquated jail. We can't beat up the sheriff because the jail is old. Again, my point remains the same. You have to train people. They have to know what they're looking for, and they have to respect the inmates. It's one thing to say that you know an inmate has dignity, that you know that he is supposed to be getting X, Y, and Z, but the reality is they're not. And so that calls for a change from the top down. You can't just bring in a deputy sheriff to change the top. It doesn't work that way. You'd be sitting the tree upside down. It simply doesn't work that way, and he'd be out the door. And I talked to deputy sheriffs who've worked down there who said they were out the door because policy is not followed, and when you adhere to it, you're ostracized. I'm giving it to you straight the way it's given to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari. I'm going to take this opportunity to ask another question posed by the citizens of the Fulton Hills Civic Association. Candidates, your campaigns all have websites, and I believe you've all brought literature here tonight. Have you read every word you are publishing? And if not, why not? If you have read it, do you stand by its accuracy? We invite you tonight to make any corrections or amendments to that information. Mr. Woody, will you answer that question?
Thank you. I have read it. I stand by it as being accurate, and I'm very familiar with what's on it.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell.
I, too, stand by my website, and I stand by my literature.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari.
Likewise, I stand by what's on my website, factual information. As you can imagine, having run for the office 3 times, I have acquired quite a chronology of information as it relates to it. And not just to beat somebody up or beat up on the sheriff, the jail, but it is something I have to be able to come to you and show you in fact what is actually going on. I don't want to just throw innuendo at people. And for that reason, I have like a 10-page website to tell you about myself as well as why I think I'm a better candidate.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
Do we have any more questions on the floor?
The thing that really puzzled me also when you said it was 28,000 inmates that came last year. Out of that 28,000, how many were repeat offenders? And if there's a large percentage, besides, like you spoke about some of the rehabilitation to stop them from coming in, but there has to be an answer as to why these people are coming back. 28,000 people is a lot of people. Richmond even ran with every people in 1 year. So why
11
people go to jail in 1 year?
Mr. Woody, can you answer that question?
My only question to that would be, from my experience, there are some serious social issues that the jail itself cannot address. There are problems that are coming from the environment, from early ages on up, and when they come there, they already have that problem. The jail is expected to correct them. They go back out, like, for instance, your most a drug addict comes out of jail and have to wait 6 months before they can find a bed for even treatment. So what do you have? You have going back into remission because of that. So that's social issue. And that's why there is a revolving door. That's why I said it's so important. And the jail and having responsibility for that is so important for us as the community leaders to try and stop people from going through the system instead of after they get to the system.
Thank you. Ms. Mitchell, can you answer that question?
Part of the reason that you have so many repeat offenders at the Richmond City Jail, and I would dare say out of that 28,000 number, I would probably say more than 50% are repeat offenders. In the city of Richmond, you can have a 12-month sentence, and that sentence can last you 5 years. They'll give you part of the sentence, and then they'll suspend the other part, expect you to go back out in the community and be a law-abiding citizen. But if you don't pay your fines, if you don't show up for court, if you're on probation, if you don't show up for your probation officer to see your probation officer, you can be violated and sent right back to the Richmond City Jail. So it's a combination of things. It's a combination of the fact that, once again, because of our limited space, we really cannot do a lot of programming at the Richmond City Jail. That's why it's so important that we begin to have the conversation with you, the public, to start to address some of their needs once they are released. Because my opponent is correct. If you really do have a serious drug problem, he's right, you can spend 6 or 7 months waiting for a bed to go into a treatment facility. And if you are a hardcore user, you're not going to be able to hold out for that long. Again, we have to understand that we live in a city and we have some very systemic problems in this city. We have illiteracy, we have unemployment, we have drug addiction, we have teenage pregnancy. And these are all social problems that we see as a result of what goes on in our community. So in answer to your question, yes, that is an accurate number. Again, it's gonna take this whole entire community along with the sheriff to address those problems, because they're not gonna go away overnight.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell.
I believe we all stand together on this one. You have to look at the big picture as well. Mm-hmm. Richmond is a microcosm of the nation. What we see here and happening, it's a revolving door in all your major metropolitan cities. It's not just happening to Richmond. I know we're all citizens of Richmond, but it's not just happening to Richmond. Also, it's the duty of the citizens to make a clamor about what's going on. You have to understand that regardless of which one of us gets the job, there's very little that we can do without your support. If the inmates don't think that they're important, and you know that an inmate simply does his time, oftentimes he loses connections with his family, everybody just puts him out, and there's nowhere to turn to. I work with homelessness, I'm under the bridges, I'm in the Salvation Army eating with them. Some of the stories are horrible, but there's nothing here for them. There's no kind of remedy here. There's no place they can turn. So what we have to decide, looking at this, we look at Abu Ghraib and what happened in Abu Ghraib, nobody really cared. They just put somebody in charge because what? That's the general sentiment about inmates. They're not to be treated like people. The only time you want them treated like people is when they say something like a First Amendment right or something. But it has to start with the voters. And again, like my challenge was initially, it's going to have to be you guys who actually put the pressure on the administration to make sure they follow through on what they promised.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari. Yes, ma'am, your question.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I think that for 12 years, I have a question concerning the 12 years. I have two questions. For 12 years, to be a leader of a program and to see a situation worsen, if one of your approaches does not work, would you consider taking another approach to see that the city jail is corrected? Also, would it take 12 more years to figure out how to correct a problem in a city facility? My next question is,
it's going to be hard to keep track of all of this. I think, ma'am,
this is real quick. How many public offices have each of the candidates ran for and have they won?
For that, I'm going to invite you to look at our candidates' literature, which is back, and they can direct you to their websites. Mr. Woody, can you answer the questions? How amenable are you to suggestions and change? What is your process?
Change is very hard to accept for a lot of people. But no change, no progress. You have to have a plan. When something goes wrong, and in every jail it will, you have to step up to the plate and say, the buck stops with me. It's my responsibility. I made a mistake. It will be corrected. And you have to partner with the community, with the state, and other law enforcement agencies around the world and find out what's best that they are doing that's going to work in the jail where you are. And you try to implement that program with your team.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell, your process.
Yes, I am very open for change. And again, I think you have to look at, I think what it is that you're asking is about the physical structure and the physical plan of the Richmond City Jail. And I'm going to say this, not wanting to offend anybody, but I'm the one person that has been talking about the conditions at the Richmond City Jail for over 12 years. We always are interested in what goes on at the jail every 3.5 years when it's an election. But after the election, I'll be still the only one coming to civic associations and going out in the community talking about the conditions at the Richmond City Jail. I don't own the building, and it's not because I don't want to take responsibility for it, but code says that the physical plant and having the jail in good repair is the responsibility of the locality. So it's up to your city government to step in and do the right thing and make the repairs and make the conditions at the Richmond City Jail better and safer. And I can honestly say that this new administration and Mayor Wilder has been very open and very honest and very supportive about recognizing the conditions for what they are and making the steps and putting the steps in place to make permanent changes. For the first time, there's a real commitment to build a new jail. That's a first. We haven't had that up until this point in time.
We wrap it up.
Mm-hmm. And they've agreed to come in and replace and maintain the locks. So we are moving in the right direction, so I am amenable to change.
Mr. Jafari, your process.
Sir. You have to surround yourself with good people, people who have worked toe-to-toe, know what they're looking for. It goes without saying that as a director of an agency, you have to be able to revise and change. You have to modify. That's what updating policy is all about. But you can't live in a cocoon. And from what I've seen, this is the first time I've really seen the sheriff in 8 years. And I work in the street. I haven't seen him. And so it's a good thing, and it's not a put-down, but that suggests to me that there's a cocoon at work. And it's good to see her out here, but it should have taken place, and the dialogue that goes along with it should have taken place a long time ago.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari. I would pose the final question. This is one promulgated, again, by the Civic Association, who works very closely with the police officers patrolling our neighborhoods.
And if you're disappointed because you couldn't ask a question, we are inviting the candidates to stay after for refreshments. We hope you'll stay and get to talk to them and know them further.
You are listening to an election special edition of Homespun C-SPAN, consisting of a debate between candidates for Richmond Sheriff's Office. This was taped October 11, 2005 at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center.
Our last question is rather specific. Do you have any idea of how long it takes for a prisoner to be turned over from the beat police to the city lockup? Would you know why that time is significantly longer than the same process in Henrico? And what do you plan to do to reduce the time to get the patrolman back on the street, Mr. Woody?
Very good question. There's a serious problem with the Richmond Police Department and the Richmond Sheriff's Office. They do not work together. One think they're better than the other one. When an officer on the beat arrests someone, he has to fill out the arrest sheet, he has to call the wagon to come pick him up, and he has to go down to the jail, sometimes wait 2 and 3 hours before it's even processed away from the beat. Now, if C.T. Woody is sure, we have jail wagons. It's no excuse for the jail wagon not to be able to, where it's on the street, to pick the prisoner up, take him down to the detention section, have him processed, and what do you have? That same officer still on your beat. We have the probation and parole officer is 2 blocks from the city jail. What do you have? When a violator has to go from probation and parole to a city jail, they call the city wagon to pick him up. Why the jail wagons can't go there and pick it up? That's management. That's organization. And they both are a part of public safety. They must work together.
Thank you, Mr. Woody. Ms. Mitchell, do you know how long it takes and what can you do to save that time?
It is a very lengthy process, but again, it speaks to experience. You have to understand that the arresting officer has the warrant. The warrant has to be sworn by the magistrate before the sheriff can take that person into custody. So you just can't have somebody to arrest somebody and have the sheriff to go and pick them up, because there's one pivotal piece that is missing, and that's the magistrate's office. Until the magistrate swears the warrant, we cannot take any inmate into our custody, because they're an arrestee at that point. They are not an inmate. So you cannot do that, because again, you would be violating somebody's rights. And as far as having wagons on the streets, once again, we do not have the resources for that, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we do. Our wagons run between the jail and the lockup, taking the overflow from the lockup back to the jail after they've been processed and given due process and given their rights. But you just cannot have an arresting officer to arrest somebody and remand them into our custody and care. It doesn't work like that. And again, that speaks to experience, not process.
Mr. Jafari, do you know how long it takes and how would you shorten that time?
Well, first of all, that time varies. And there are a number of variables. I'm not going to sit here and just try to suggest to you some kind of hypothetical about reducing this or reducing that. Like every department, should I become sheriff, every department will be under review, including how much time it takes when they come into the Sally Port, what is going on, whether people are lollygagging. You see, those are the kinds of management issues that you have to stay on top of. You have to know that your people are not, they're not being territorial. They're doing their jobs. You're not paying somebody to be territorial. So the only way you can know how much time it takes, and how much time you can shorten is to make sure that you go there and actually observe where the gap in the time is and where it's occurring at. And so that's the extent of anything that I could promise you about that time thing, because that's an inside issue, and you can't make it from the outside. You can't make that determination. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jafari. It's time to wrap up the debate, so I invite the candidates to make their closing statements. Mr. Woody, again, you are first. You have 2 minutes for your closing statement.
Thank you. It's time for a change. I ask you tonight to think about what you want in an elected official. This is an opportunity to right the ship. I stand for honesty, integrity, accountability, solutions, not excuses, moving forward, not standing still. I'm not a politician, but I do make you the following promises. I will not use any monies that don't belong to me. I will not put my name on any city vehicle. I will not have a 9-to-2 work day. I will not abuse the power and the authority of the office. We can make the Richmond Sheriff's Office and City Jail second to none in this state, and that's my goal. If you support change, vote for me on November the 8th, 2005. Thank you very much.
Ms. Mitchell, 2 minutes for your closing statement.
Thank you. First, again, I'd like to thank you all for coming out tonight and being so attentive and listening to us. I will make you the pledge that I've always made you. My heart and my passion and my commitment has always been to my staff, who are second to none. My pledge has always been to the 435 deputies who work under my care, for the inmates who are under my care, to be the very best sheriff that I possibly can be. If you want somebody who is willing to stand up and fight 365 days a year, continuously, for better conditions, then that person is me. Our record is not perfect, and I will not sit here and tell you that it is. But I think if you take a look at the amount of people that we have to deal with, the budget constraints that we have to deal with, it's extraordinary that we have not had an escape. For all of the talk that we have about the lives, we haven't had anybody to walk out of the Richmond City Jail on my time. We haven't had a serious outbreak of hepatitis. We haven't had a serious outbreak of any communicable disease, and it's because we are attentive and we are on the watch, and we give you 110% every day. The men and women who are in my care, in my stead, deserve to have a sheriff that has a breadth of knowledge and experience. They deserve to have somebody who's willing, at personal risk, to stand up and fight for what's right. And that person is me. I've spent my entire life doing that. And like I said, I will always do that because it's the right thing to do. And I will always be on the side of right. Thank you.
Mr. Jafari, 2 minutes for your closing statement.
When I see the turnout, it lets us know that this is a reflection of the importance that the community is placing on the sheriff's race this year. And that's very encouraging because it has to trickle down. We came in here as a group, I know you have the Civic Association, but you're gonna have to make a choice as an individual when you step into that room where you pull the lever. You're gonna have to decide whether we're gonna continue with the practice of warehousing individuals and giving them nothing while you have them in there, put them on the street, and if they survive, letting them get out. Or going with corrections. In corrections, the jail that they said somebody was rocking the door for 5 times, the first time you rock my door, that's a breach of security, that's a charge. I've been there. I know it works. You have to send a strong message. If you don't send a strong message to the inmates and you don't walk the inmate bodily to a cell, how in the world do you know where he is? He could be at Fifth and Broad. And that's drawing it out, but that's true. We have to have the experience that's necessary to know what you're looking at. And you have to be able to train your people for what they need to look at to detect what's going on and what needs to be done. If an inmate gets to walk to his cell by himself, you don't know what he's passing. He's passing contraband and everything else. I'm from corrections. I learned that the only way to do it was mano on mano, one to one. And when it works, and it does work, you put the pad and the pencil on the table and you start writing. By the time you finish at the circuit court, every inmate in there will get the message. Don't shake my doors. Don't shake my doors. Don't attack my staff. Don't put your hands on my staff. Don't put your hands on another inmate. And if you work for me, don't you abuse an inmate. I've been in there. I've investigated situations like that. And where need be, I will send a staff out the door, whether it's 3 days or for the lifetime. You will treat them with dignity while they're under our watch, and you will give them something to put in their toolbox. What is a toolbox? That's a correctional term. When they come in there,
Mr. Jafari.
Thank you. When they come in there, they don't have a lot. Starting with the very magazines they read, something about welding, something about plumbing. You can change the way some of them are thinking, but you also have to have officers there who will protect them and allow them to leave breathing. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to an hour-long election special of Homespun C-SPAN. Today, thanks to a taping by Dustin Richardson, we brought you a full hour-long debate between the candidates for sheriff's office in Richmond, Virginia. This was taped October 11th at the Fulton Hill Neighborhood Resource Center. The current city sheriff, Michelle Mitchell, former Richmond Police Homicide Detective C.T. Woody, and Emmett J. Jafari, a longtime veteran of the City Department of Corrections, were featured as the three candidates. These three candidates were introduced and then moderated by Donna Dora, the Vice President of the Greater Fulton Hill Civic Association. Thanks for listening to Homespun C-SPAN, and remember that democracy is not voting once every few years.